Welcome to ACC Nation. On this episode, Will Ogenin and I'm Jim Quist. Coming up, our special guest is an award-winning sports columnist who has been with the Daily Press since 1984. He's been providing us with excellent coverage and insight into the Atlantic Coast Conference. He's been there for dozens of college bowl games and NCAA Final Fours. His resume includes a Super Bowl, U.S. Open Golf, and the Summer Olympics. He's a member of the Virginia Sports Hall of Fame. And in addition to writing, he hosts the podcast Teal Time. There's much more to his resume, but for now, we welcome David Teal to ACC Nation Podcast. Thank you for joining us, David.
My pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. I know that you've just returned from ACC kickoff, where the entirety of the conference's football is jam-packed into a couple of sometimes brain-throbbing days. So let's start there and get your overall impression of how the Atlantic Coast Conference looks this season.
Well, I don't think it's any secret that Clemson is the overwhelming favorite, and deservedly so. I mean, you're talking about the three-time defending league champion that has been to the college football playoff in each of those years and won the national championship in 2016. And, oh, by the way, returns 8 starters on defense, 7 on offense. And, Jim, those 15 players have combined for 325 Clemson starts. That's an incredible volume of quality experience that the Tigers return. And 9 of those players were all ACC last season.
Not to go too far out on a limb here, but it sounds like the ACC has another champion in the wings. Now, I guess the question, I want to go a little further here. Is this a team that looks like it's going to grab a national title?
I think it absolutely could. To my way of thinking, Clemson has more returning talent than anyone in the country, more than Alabama, more than Georgia, more than Oklahoma, more than Ohio State. You can run down the list of perennial contenders. Now, Alabama will probably be number one in the preseason polls, and I get that. Tide won the national championship last season and beat Clemson handily in the CFP semis. But I believe the Crimson Tide only returns 3 or 4 starters on defense. Mm-hmm. I really like this Clemson team, especially with Brent Venables back coordinating a defense that has so many returnees.
Nice pay hike there recently, too. Doesn't
hurt. How about
hurt.
That? Up to the $2 million range for Coach V.
Setting a new standard for not only the ACC, but also the NCAA. We'll take that. No problem.
Absolutely.
Let's get into some specifics, David. Let's talk about,
sure.
And this is the one that seemed to be the headline in probably not for the best reasons, but I'm going to touch on it nonetheless. Larry Fedora and CTE. What do you take away from that?
Well, first of all, I want to stress to you and your listeners, I wasn't there in front of Larry Fedora when he made his remarks. So I didn't hear the tone. Mm-hmm. I didn't see his, just his expressions and such. And I think that's just important to concede up front. Now, obviously, like everyone else, I read his comments, and they were, in fact, jarring. And to me, yet another example of the old adage, you have to know what you don't know. And when a football coach tries to play scientist, I think you're going to get in trouble, and clearly Coach Fedora did. I think he got way out over his skis. I don't believe anyone thinks, and I certainly don't, that Larry Fedora is reckless in terms of player safety. I mean, there is concussion research on the Carolina campus that is among the best in the country. And the leader of that research has come out and said no coach has been as supportive of his program as Larry Fedora. So I think Larry's heart is in the right place, but he just, his comments were where he kind of denies the linkage between CTE and playing football. They were just jarring, and they deserve to be reported.
Let's go on to Florida State. Let's talk about Willie Taggart. This was his first ever ACC kickoff, from at least my knowledge as a coach. We know for sure. What was you have any takeaways there?
Well, he's of particular interest to us here in the Commonwealth because Virginia Tech opens the season Labor Day night in Tallahassee, and brand new coach. He's got a quarterback decision to make between James Blackman, who started last year after DeAndre Francois got hurt in the opener against Alabama, and Francois, who had started the previous season as a redshirt freshman for the Seminoles. I was really struck by this comment that Willie Taggart made in the big press conference where he said that he expected to find, and this is his word, mm-hmm. turds in the program. In other words, bad kids. And he said that's not the truth. He said the truth is that there are really quality young men in the Seminoles program. But the fact that he came in expecting that speaks to a disconnect between the former staff, Jimbo Fisher, and what was going on down there. It just struck me as very strange.
So, and let's take that just a little further in, because my immediate thought was there is perception. And Jimbo Fisher, for all his strengths, also had a lot of weaknesses. And one of them was, I think, perception by community and those of us who are on the outside, that maybe that was a program that was a little bit out of control. And is that what you feel like maybe Taggart was sort of, I hate to get into specifics there, but I mean, roundabout alluding to maybe is the best way to come at that.
Undisciplined, I think, is the word, and I think it's mm-hmm. absolutely fair. I mean, if the Jameis Winston wasn't, if that situation wasn't enough to convince you, then I don't know what was. I mean, Florida State, led by Jimbo Fisher, enabled Jameis Winston, and all those stunts essentially went unpunished. And I think the perception was, and I think it was accurate, was there was a lack of discipline. And even Cam Akers, the sophomore running back, who was one of the two players that Florida State brought to the kickoff, talked about how if you're a nanosecond late to a team meeting, you're on dawn patrol the next day, translation 6 a.m. workouts. And someone asked him, well, what would have happened if you were similarly late under the previous regime? And his answer was, oh, there'd be some consequences, but nothing like that. And it was clear from Akers' remarks that the discipline has been ratcheted up in Tallahassee.
Well, that's a good thing for Seminoles fans, because I think they'll see the difference on the field. That focus. Now, since you brought up that first game with Virginia Tech, let's go to Virginia Tech. Now, they've had some off-season misfortune. Can coaches Fuente and Foster work their magic? We'll talk about that Florida State-Virginia Tech matchup. Are they going to be able to put together a team, either keep it close or maybe take the game from the Seminoles?
Well, Bud Foster, the defensive coordinator you referenced, is among the, if not the, nation's best. I mean, he is as accomplished as they get in the coordinator role, and he is going to be challenged like few other times in his career this preseason. The Hokies return only four defensive starters. And two of those personnel losses were unexpected. and both at the cornerback, well, three of them really, two cornerbacks, Adonis Alexander, academically ineligible, Jeremy Webb, a junior college transfer, an Achilles injury, and then a linebacker slash defensive back, Mook Reynolds, who was dismissed from the program for violating athletic department policy. All three of those very well could have started opening night, and Reynolds and Alexander were returning starters. So that really hurts. And they are now left with very inexperienced group at corner and no experience at linebacker, which they knew going in. So, you know, you talk about you're facing in that first game, you know, a tandem of running backs and Jaquez Patrick and Cam Akers. Those linebackers better be fitting gaps the proper way, or there's going to be some long runs broken. And if you look at Virginia Tech's roster, to me, the most notable aspect is the Hokies have been playing in a conference, either the Big East or the ACC, since 1991. This is only the second time they have not returned a single all-conference player. Now, the last time that happened was 2004, their first year in the ACC, when all eight of their all Big East guys from the previous season graduated, and all the Hokies did was win the ACC in their first year of membership.
Our special guest is David Teal on ACC Nation Podcast, and let's go over to Buzz Williams in talking about some off-season misfortune, and I'm not sure that's the best way to characterize it. Two assistant coaches disappearing in 6 weeks. I'm not really sure what to make of that, but I have seen conjecture, and you know how it is in the blogosphere and on Twitter, how rumors get started. But let's get a professional's viewpoint here. What do you think is going on?
Well, the first departure, Jim, was Jeff Reynolds, who was an administrative role with the Hokies. He was not one of the three full-time assistant coaches. He took a full-time assistant coach position at Texas A&M. That's a promotion. I mean, that's not, you know, jarring or striking in any way. That's just the normal progression of things. Now, today's news that Steve Rocafort, Buzz Williams' top assistant, is leaving for a similar position at East Carolina. Now, that is curious, because you just rarely see a coach leave an ACC program for one at a different level. And the American Athletic, specifically East Carolina, is not of Virginia Tech's caliber. Now, ECU has a new head coach in Joe Dooley, who comes from Florida Gulf Coast. He's coached previously also at East Carolina. But to the best of my knowledge, there are no direct ties between Rocafort and Dooley. They've never worked together. Now, maybe they're friendly. I do not know. But it's an odd career move, to be sure.
Oh, keep an eye on that and see what comes of it. Let's get back into football. Let's talk a little more about what's going on that scene, since, again, you were in Charlotte at ACC kickoff. There are a number of teams in the ACC that, to be blunt, just haven't really rounded their corner yet. Some teams are going to take a little longer than others. Last year, at this same time, the teams that were on that list, tell us who's off the list this year and who may still be building.
Well, I think the team that is perhaps poised to make the biggest jump now was in postseason last year and improved is Boston College. We talked about Clemson returning nine all-ACC players. Well, Boston College returns five, and that's the second most in the league. And that's not that's not a punter or a place kicker. That's five all-ACC guys on offense or defense. And that includes A.J. Dillon, the league's top returning running back, who rushed for almost 1,600 yards last season as a true freshman. And, you know, you pair him behind what is perhaps the second best offensive line in the league behind Clemson's, and you have a returning starting quarterback and Anthony Brown, who's got, you know, he's got those hips and that just that little spring in his step. He's elusive. I think the Eagles could take that next step up to 8-9 wins. Now, granted, the schedule is difficult, but I think Steve Addazio's crew could be quite good this season.
I know that's a fairly encouraging thing to hear for fans, and it's certainly I'm of the same opinion that you are in your observations. Looks to me like this is a team that's sort of prepared to make that next step. Now, on that list, there may be a couple other teams. Anybody else that you would say is working on getting around the corner, not quite there yet, or maybe somebody who has just turned the corner and we're not aware of them, but we should be?
Virginia's trying to turn that corner and has been for some time. Now, with Bryce Perkins, the junior college transfer at quarterback, Bronco Mendenhall has the mobile guy behind center that worked so well for him when he was at Brigham Young. Kurt Bankert was a above average passer, I thought, the last two seasons for the Cavaliers, but was not the mobile type. Perkins is, but the big question in Charlottesville is whether there's linemen to block for him. And that has been problematic for several years for the Cavaliers. And it's just hard to see them suddenly, you know, morphing into a 8-win team. I mean, they got to 6-6 last year. The schedule is similarly manageable this year from a non-conference standpoint. They should, mirroring last season, do well early. The question then becomes, how do they fare later in the year against the meat of that schedule? And North Carolina State has arguably the top returning quarterback in the league, and Ryan Finley, and a lot of weapons around him, including Kelvin Harmon, the wide receiver. But the Pack has to replace 8 starters from that defense from a year ago, including the league's best defender, Bradley Chubb. So I just wonder if that defensive overhaul is going to, you know, keep the Pack at that 8-win level for another season.
Yeah, no small task there. Let's jump back to Bronco Mendenhall's group here. A lot of talk about a new offense. You have any insight there?
Well, I think there you'll see some read option. I think you'll see more use of Olamide Zaccheaus and Joe Reed, who are very, very versatile. You know, they can catch the ball out on the perimeter as receivers. They can line up in the backfield. Reed's also a terrific kickoff returner, led the league last season and took 2 to the house. I think it will look very different than we've seen the last two seasons, all because of Bryce Perkins.
Okay, now here's one that I have for you. 27 ACC quality players. That's a quote, Bronco Mendenhall. Is Coach Mendenhall being a straight shooter and simply smoothing the path for a little bit longer rebuild time, or is he just merely a good poker player?
It's a very misconstrued quote is what it is, Jim. He made those remarks to the Board of Visitors earlier this summer. And what he said was, there are 27 ACC caliber players returning. Okay, so let's massage that a little bit. So it's not like they played last season with 27 ACC caliber players. Everyone who left, you know, the Bankers, the Blandings, the Kaisers, Andrew Brown, all those guys were clearly ACC caliber players. So the Virginia probably had 35 or 40 last season. Mendenhall went on to say that when you add the incoming freshmen coming into the program, they probably have 40 plus ACC caliber players. Is that ideal? No, clearly not when you have 85 on scholarship. But that quote got out there and everybody jumped on it and no one searched for the context. And you mentioned earlier how the blogosphere and Twitter works. Well, that's what happened. And no one took the time to flush it out. And 3 days after he made those remarks and one day after they became public, I called him and he explained himself to me. And also I listened to the full audio of what he told the Board of Visitors. And those who first reported those remarks didn't do either of those things.
And this is exactly why I ask you the question, David, because I knew that you had done the follow-up and had an answer. So for clarification purposes, that clears it up very quickly. And I hope people were listening closely to what you just said. Let me ask about another matchup at the front end of the ACC season, which quite frankly, it kind of makes me cringe on one end, but on another, it may be entertaining. And that is Louisville and Alabama. I realize these games are scheduled years in advance. I'm sure Bobby Petrino would love to have a little different setup or roster of players at this point going into that game. Where's the positive side of this game?
Well, the positive side is going to be Bobby Petrino is going to learn a whole lot about his team very quickly. Now, whether all that will be good remains to be seen. The Cardinals are very high on Lamar Jackson's heir apparent at quarterback, Juwan Pass. And he, too, will be surrounded by, much like Ryan Finley, by quality receivers, and he also has an experienced offensive line in front of him. Now, that offensive line struggled to protect Lamar Jackson. If they're not any better, Mr. Pass is going to be in for a long evening against Alabama. And then on the other side of the ball, Louisville, again, much like North Carolina State, is having to rebuild virtually its entire defense. That's no way to go into an opener against the defending national champion.
Let's jump into one last team here, because this is a team that I've picked to do much better, and that's I have a personal interest. In other words, it's not that I'm not a specific fan of any team in the ACC. I am a fan of the ACC in general, but I look at Duke, and I look at Coach Cutcliffe and what he has been able to perform. And how he's a very low-key kind of guy when it comes to talking about what he has and what he can do and what he anticipates. What do you see out of Duke this season?
Jim, last season, Duke's per-game point allowance on defense was the program's best since the 1970s. And they have a lot of those guys back. Including the linebacker, Joe Giles Harris, who was first team all ACC last year, and a cornerback who was second team all ACC in Mark Gilbert, an experienced safety and Jeremy McDuffie. And they've got 8 starters back total on defense and 7 on offense, you know, including their quarterback, Daniel Jones. So if you're looking for a coastal division dark horse to challenge Miami, who is the consensus favorite, I think Duke is your team.
We'll see how that all wraps up here this season, because I'm not one for putting a whole lot of faith in preseason polling and things. I'm a believer in about three or four games in, we know what we've got. You had an opportunity to speak with ACC Commissioner John Swofford. His demeanor, which is normally kind of low-key anyway, seemed to me this year at the kickoff to be maybe a little bit more low-key than normal in some ways. But, of course, you know, you spoke with him. What are you hearing from John Swofford? And let me add an additional question there. How long before John Swofford says, you know, it's time to hang up my hat, and who might be stepping into that role behind him?
Well, let's address the first question at the top. I mean, I found him to be pretty optimistic. I mean, he talked about how the league is in better shape, and I think he's right, competitively, than it's ever been across the board. And football-wise, there's no question. The last 5 years of ACC football are unmatched in conference history. When you're talking about two national champions within that span, with Florida State in 13 and Clemson in 16, and having a team in the final four or the final two each of those 5 years, the ACC's never enjoyed a stretch like that. And poised to continue it this year with Clemson and or Miami. And he's upbeat about the 2019 launch of the ACC network, the linear channel that's a partnership with ESPN. He understands his AD's concern about the growing revenue gap between the ACC and the Southeastern Conference and the Big Ten, but he's hopeful and cautiously optimistic that the ACC network will bridge that gap. And in my conversation with him, the most interesting things to me were the programming that's going to be on that ACC network. Games that you're used to seeing on ABC or ESPN are instead going to be on the ACC network, big-time football games. And in a little bit of breaking news, John confirmed to me that the ACC is seriously considering starting the 2019-20 basketball season right away, first week of November, with a full slate of conference games.
Wow.
It would be unprecedented in league history.
That's pretty exciting news. Yeah, I wouldn't have seen that one coming down the pike at all. So
when you think about it, they're expanding the league schedule from 18 to 20 games.
Mm-hmm.
So they need an extra week of league play, and just to really drum up interest in the network. And oh, by the way, maybe to create a little leverage with cable providers to carry that network. I think this is what ESPN and the ACC want to do. And I think it might work. And college basketball has a problem with the beginning of its season. It's so dwarfed by the college football season that few except the real diehards pay attention. This will make people pay attention. This will be a headline grabber. And, you know, then you ask the second question, how long does John Swofford want to do this? He turns 70 in December. I wish I looked as good as he does, and I'm more than a decade his junior. He really irritates me. So let's put that up front. He looks great. He says he feels great. He really enjoys what he does. To the best of my knowledge, he has the full support of his president. I don't think John Swofford has any plans right now about retiring. I know some people had kind of thought, including myself, that maybe once the network got launched in 2019-20 and with the ACC basketball tournament in Greensboro in 2020, right there, a stone's throw from the conference office, that maybe that might be his exit ramp. But I don't think so. Not if he has any say in it.
Well, he's a savvy businessman. There's no doubt about that. If you, you know, and you know this, having covered the ACC for so many years, and I've certainly been there as well, in watching him, I see the business side of him first. And boy, you couldn't ask for a better person to be at the helm. So if he stays on, that is a plus because of all the things I've seen him do. Let's find out a little more about David Teal. We've talked about ACC kickoff and all kinds of things, and you've given us some great insight. When it comes to sports, from Little League to the pros, what's your favorite sport or sports and the teams you like to follow?
Well, I don't really follow teams. When you've been doing this as long as I have, you just tend to follow the teams that you cover. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much invested following Virginia and Virginia Tech. Those are the programs I keep closest tabs on. But, gosh, we also have William & Mary and Old Dominion and Hampton University, a division, really good Division III school here in Newport News, Christopher Newport. So there's a lot to keep me and my teammates at the Daily Press busy.
Well, now let's move on to this. Any special projects that you're working on, or maybe some hobbies that you'd care to share with us all?
Well, my primary hobby is my 6-year-old.
That's a full-time hobby.
Yes. I got a late start in life and didn't get married till I was 51 and didn't have a child until I was 52. And she wears me out and warms my heart every day. And so she is my primary hobby. I'm a workout fiend. I get my workout in every morning. But other than that, taking care of her and my sweetheart wife, that's what keeps me going.
That I was going to say, you talk about having a workout in the morning. Isn't a 6-year-old enough of a workout for the whole entire day?
I voiced her on her mom for at least 30 or 45 minutes so I can get my sweat on.
Good for you. You're a better man than I can tell you. And finally, where can listeners read and listen to you? We'll start with your website and where people can hook up with your podcast and more.
Well, just dailypress.com/sports. Really easy to find. My unattractive face is all over that no. website. The podcast is there. All our stories are there. The Twitter handle is David Teal, ATDP. Easy to find me there as well, if you're so inclined.
Well, I would encourage people to do that. I have been following you for years and years. You know, I enjoy reading and also listening to the podcast. It's very informative and gives me a lot of insight as to what's happening and things that sometimes I don't even think about. And so I encourage people to check you out at the Daily Press, at Teal Time Podcast, and of course on Twitter. And that's a great way to hook up with David and follow all the things that are going on in the ACC, plus a lot more. Our special guest, David Teal of the Daily Press, an award-winning sports columnist and podcaster with superb coverage and insight into the Atlantic Coast Conference. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope that you'll be able to join us again.
Jim, my pleasure. Thanks again for having me, man. It was fun.
The balloting to determine preseason ranking by media attending the ACC kickoff has been released. We're going to go over how teams fared in the divisions, who wins the Coastal and Atlantic, plus who is expected to take home a rather large conference trophy. When all is said and done, we're going to compare that to how we picked as well. So, Will, let's take a look at, I'm going to skip over this first one here and just go down to the Coastal. That may be a little more interesting overall. I mean, it's not as predetermined per se. Mm-hmm. So in the Coastal Division, we've got Miami as the top team. And that, well, that's who they've got as the top team. So who did we pick? Across the board, let's see. It's all Miami. Surprise, surprise. All three of us chose Miami. Next up, Virginia Tech. The only naysayer in that whole group was me. I said Duke. And in the conversation earlier with David Teal, I don't know that he's sold from the standpoint of seeing Duke take over from Virginia Tech, but he said there's some promise there, so that's encouraging. Next up is Georgia Tech, and you and Xavion both have Georgia Tech as your picks. I have Virginia Tech at number three, and part of that has to do with some of the loss of players for a variety of reasons. The media says that Duke, and you're following right along with that, Will, Duke, and Xavion's got Duke. I've got Georgia Tech at this point. What's wrong with me?
And a lot of things, let's be honest. But
and we have no time to get into all of it. Here's where it starts to get interesting, though. Next is Pitt. That's who the media picked after Duke. Now, in this particular instance, this is where I start squaring up with, at least on one team. But you've got Virginia, and so does Xavion. You guys see something. So tell me, what do you see in Virginia that is going to overtake Pitt?
Okay, so obviously a lot of people are not high on Virginia because they lost, you know, Kurt Benkert, who was one of the more productive quarterbacks in school history in terms of yardage, you know, single season, and set some records. Obviously, people think that's going to be, you know, they're going to be down there. They lost, you know, two big wide receivers are gone. You know, they lost three of their best defensive players, and Andrew Brown, Micah Kizer, and Quinn Blanding. Where I think Virginia will still be good this year is I feel like this is going to be the year where you're going to see Virginia's offense more to what Bronco Mendenhall ran at BYU. There's going to be a little more of running with the quarterback of Bryce Perkins. He's more to the type of quarterback that Bronco prefers instead of the more pocket passer that Kurt Banker was. So I think they will be better there. They're going to be running the ball more this year. I don't think there's as huge a drop-off on defense as everybody else seems to think. On the defensive line, yeah, there is nobody that's on Andrew Brown's level. They patched up, you know, what they needed to do. There's still going to be issues with depth there. They did bring in a grad transfers, and then they have a couple of solid returning players for this year. I think even though Micah Kizer's gone, I still think the linebackers are going to be very strong. Jordan Mack, Chris Peace, and Malcolm Cook back for another year. I think the linebacking core is still going to be very good. Even though, and like I say, with the loss of Quinn Blanding, I feel like the secondary is going to be just fine because I think Juan Thornhill is going to be basically the guy who's going to be the new Quinn Blanding. I don't think he's quite as good as Quinn was, but he's still going to be a really good player. And I think he's, as a senior, I think he's somebody who's really poised to jump up in a lot of people's boards this year.
I'm really looking forward to the new Virginia offense. I think there's something dynamic and exciting awaiting anybody who is especially a fan of Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Let me add this one caveat, though.
Sure.
Play calling.
Yeah.
That could always rear its ugly head. It's been a problem, a little questionable at times, obviously, with Robert and I. Well, let's rewind here. Play calling has been an issue of Virginia on offense for a number of years now. So it's nothing new. But for once, this might be the year that there might be better play calling. But we'll see. I know a lot of people do not I have a short leash for Robert and I. Let's just say it that way.
All right. Well, let me throw this out at you and see how you feel about this. And maybe this will clarify things a little bit. Let's take a couple of factors. Number one, not having the type of players that fit within a certain type of program. Not having a scheme in place that they really want. So having a coach that's used to having players and a scheme that work within his framework, you know, his mindset, maybe that was the problem. But if he doesn't perform this year, I say he gets the boot.
And I think a lot of people, I mean, people have been down on him, you know, for a while, but this is definitely going to be a make or break year for him. But I hope, I hope, you know, if play calling does struggle, he struggles with that. I think you have to make a change no matter how close they are.
Yeah.
Because at some point it's going to be your head if it keeps up.
Well, true. I think that Bronco Mendenhall doesn't have to worry about his head so much for quite a while. But
no.
Virginia is just one of those schools that just doesn't go that direction very frequently of just getting rid of people. Though we do have a very aggressive and progressive AD in place now. Deliver or, you know, goodbye.
I think there's a chance he might get more of a Bronco might get more of a leash here, just because I think what Carla Williams in talking with him realizes that this program needs a lot more, and she's doing a lot of work to get the funds and to help get Bronco what he needs. There's still a ways away from getting there, but I feel like, yeah, realistically, Bronco probably won't be on the hot seat for at least 2 more years.
At least. I would agree with you. I was thinking exactly the same thing, Will. Probably 2 years minimum. And I think that's just enough time for them to really build that program. And let's be realistic. And people will flinch about this and probably squeal. But here's a reality check. Virginia's program has really been in the dumps for a while. And that goes across the board. You're talking about facilities, recruiting, coaching staff, whatever you want to lay out there, it's been in the dumps, especially for a major college. So there is a lot of turnaround that needs to be implemented here. Having a quality coach in place, and I hope he has the patience that it's going to take and the time that's going to have to be invested to turn Virginia around. I think that'll happen. It's just, you know, it's one of those things in college ball. You just have to wait it out and make it happen. Let's take a look at who's next on this list. We had Virginia, and the folks at ACC Kickoff had Pitt, obviously. They have North Carolina next, and you've got Pitt. I have Virginia in that. Xavion's got Pitt as well. I think this is one of these toss-up things. And now, here's the big difference. They put Virginia last in their selection, and we right across the board took North Carolina as being the cellar dweller for the Coastal. I can't, for the life of me, put Virginia at the bottom of the heap here. And I know there's a lot of promise on North Carolina's roster, but I don't see it all coming together.
Well, the way I look at Pitt and North Carolina is, well, you know, North Carolina has the better offense. Yeah, obviously they're great at quarterback. I think they have a quarterback competition going into fall camp, but whoever's going to come out ahead, I think is going to be good. They're strong at running back. You know, Michael Carter, I mentioned him. I'm a big fan of his. You know, Anthony Ratliff Williams at receiver is one of the most dynamic playmakers in the league. He can catch a pass and just like that be gone. Yeah. There's questions about Pitt. Absolutely. You know, I think their defense is better, but yeah, I feel like that's where I might give them the edge. You know, but realistically, we've talked about this before. Pitt's defense has not been that good under, you know, a guy who is a defensive coach, Pat Narduzzi. And I thought it was interesting. I was reading something today, and one of the ways to describe Pitt's defense is, you know, he wants to run Michigan State's old defense, but he doesn't have the the Michigan State level of talent to do it. And I feel like that's hurting him in a way.
Yeah, he's not adjusting.
Right.
And that's why I would put him this season, if something doesn't start turning the corner, I would say he's on a warm seat.
I would agree with you, actually. I think, yeah, if they struggle to make a bowl again, he's probably going to have the hottest seat going into 2019.
Yeah, which is a shame. But some people, coordinators, some of them are not cut out to be head coaches. And it takes a lot to be a head coach and to see the bigger picture on both sides of the ball. Swinney is a former wide receivers coach, right? And look at his defense. Of course, he's put it into the hands of a very capable guy who now is making some big bucks. But, you know, same thing down at Virginia Tech. If you got somebody who's that smart on one side of the ball and you're good on another, make sure you surround yourself with good people. Let's go over to the Atlantic Division. This is a slam dunk. Clemson. Clemson picked by Will, Xavion, and myself across the board. Next up is Florida State. Now, Will and I both agree that Florida State is the team that's possibly going to give Clemson a run for their money. Xavion thinks NC State is that team. Xavion not being here, let's quickly examine and we'll tell you what we'll do. We'll just be naysayers since we are naysayers since we picked Florida State. Why isn't NC State going to be in that number two position?
I think it's because of what they lost. They lost so many talented players. And going on offense, Nyheim Hines is gone. Obviously, Jalen Samuels, who was pretty much Mr. Everything for that NC State offense, is gone. You look at the entire defensive line being drafted, you know, by the end of the second day, and probably would have been by the end of the second round if not for one of them getting injured in the workouts. But they, you know, you don't get necessarily get the benefit of a doubt a team like NC State if you, you're expecting a little bit of a rebuild there, not so much of a reload, but at the same time, you know, the reason where I could make an argument for Xavion's case is, okay, you've got Ryan Finley, he's arguably the best quarterback in the league, and I would agree with that. You know, we could see a lot of shootout wins for NC State, and he would, he definitely has the ability to win a lot of games on the strength of his arm.
I see the strength of Finley. I see some weaknesses there on offense, which would preclude him from having enough time to deliver any kind of effective, especially the long ball. Now on defense, too much reload for me. That's part of the reason why I didn't go that route. You know, NC State is number three on the list by media at ACC Kickoff. We are picking Boston College across the board. And I can't help. And they've got BC at number four. So we're pretty close here. Oh, actually, we're all at four. Sorry, didn't mean to skip there. But yeah, I think that Boston College is going to be a team that really is going to be a surprise for a lot of people. And what happens when people do preseason rankings, they tend to look back. You know, it's the only reference you have sometimes, right? But if you're smart enough to look back and say, okay, here are the players that they've maintained and here's their growth, if you look that deep, you see that the offense at Boston College is going to tear some people up this year. This is something we don't expect from Boston College. And, you know, we heard that with one of our former guests, David Teal, also said that earlier. It's a team to watch. So this is something that Boston College is going to be a surprise team. I wouldn't be too surprised if they aren't a lot higher up, and I could see them going as high as number two on this list. I don't think anybody has anything that will knock Clemson off.
No, I mean, Clemson's in its own zip code. But as far as Boston College goes, you mentioned it. You know, they have so much, especially on the offensive side of the ball coming back. I mean, we mentioned A.J. Dillon, the best back in the league. He's going to be, you know, only better. Anthony Brown, you hope he, you know, is a little more consistent throwing the ball this year. And they return their top, you know, their top receivers, you know, Tommy Sweeney, who our guest last week talked about, you know, might be, you know, one of the better tight ends in the league. They return, you know, pretty much their whole offensive line. So there's going to be so much optimism offensively for the Eagles. And you know, they return, you know, six starters on defense, and they have, you know, they're a lot of quality players. And I'll tell you what, the schedule actually does set up pretty well for them in the early part of the year. You know, they open with UMass. They have Holy Cross. That's 2-0. At Wake is winnable. At Purdue, winnable. Temple at home, winnable. They could be 5-0 going into an October 6th game at NC State.
Hmm. Quite frankly, I see them taking NC State.
It's possible.
I mean, that's where I'm coming from.
Be interesting to see where NC State is at that time. We'll get a better idea of you know, what that new look defense is going to be like. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot there.
Preseason rankings, one of the things that we always like to make sure that everybody understands, it really is just it's projecting. And again, looking back at what happened last year, and really nobody has a clue until you get about three or four games in and really, you know, settle down and start seeing if teams have a rhythm, then you'll know whether or not they are ranked where they should be. Next up on the list from the media guys, Louisville, and you've got Louisville picked at that spot as well. Xavion and I have Wake Forest. I'm not sold on Louisville. I really like Jamon Pass. I think that he has the potential. I don't know that anybody's going to be as dynamic as Lamar Jackson. He was a pretty unique guy. I mean, but Jamon Pass has, I think, he is a full package in ways that are different and better. Now, whether or not they have all the tools to surround him and protect him, we're going to find out, I guess, in the Alabama game. I just think that's going to be ugly.
Welcome to college football, opening up with Alabama.
Yeah, that's an ugly way to start. Next up is Wake Forest. You've got Wake Forest in that position. That's where Xavion has Louisville. And I put Syracuse because I just believe that they have put enough or have enough talent on the roster, plus some of the recruits that they're bringing in will make enough of a difference to push them a little further up. Ironically, I have Louisville as my last team. And again, that's probably a head scratcher for most people. Syracuse is listed last. You have Syracuse last, as does Xavion. Now tell me why you think that Syracuse ought to be the cellar dweller in this division.
I have not seen them make a stop in the time Dino Babers has coached there. That's the biggest issue. And they did improve a little bit last year, but they're still giving up 32 points a game. Mm-hmm. And I don't care how many points you score. If you're averaging giving up 32 points a game, you're going to be hard pressed to win a lot of games. And you know, they do return some of that talent back, but still they lose their top two tacklers or four of their top five tacklers from last year. There's a lot of work to be done on that defense, and their schedule is actually a little tough too.
Yeah. Well, a good analysis, and this has been fun to take a look at the ACC kickoff preseason rankings and compare them to what we have. I'm really looking forward to being a couple games in and seeing if our picks and their picks are comparable or if anybody is moving in the right direction or the wrong direction. Thanks again to our special guest this episode, David Teal. Man, what a great guy to have on the program. Will has a very interesting piece on Miami up on the website. You'll want to read that. It's called Moon Over Miami, where it takes a look at the stats in regard to turnovers. And man, I'll tell you what, that's a good piece, Will. That really lays out a case for people not getting overly excited. You need to read that. It's on the website. Again, it's Moon Over Miami, Will's piece about turnovers and the Hurricanes. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at ACC Nation. On Facebook at ACC Nation Sports. You can find us on Twitter. Will is at Will's World MN. Xavion is at Xavion. And I'm at ACC The Q. Next week's special guest is the managing editor of D1Baseball.com, Kendall Rogers, with an interesting look at what's to come in ACC baseball. Be sure to subscribe. It's free, folks, at accnation.net. Remember, that's .net, accnation.net. I want to take just a moment for Will and myself pass along that our friend Xavion's father-in-law passed away. That's part of the reason why he hasn't been on the program lately. It's been a very long, hard journey for all. And we're thinking of you, and hope that those of you listening send some good thoughts along to Xavion's family. Until next time.